You're listening to Potato Candy Network. Hello, and welcome back to Blank Monster. I'm your host, Marie, and here on Blank Monster, I go through two or three Monsters in the Moss Manual that I think are underrated or overrated and need a couple of new ideas. We are currently going through the 5th edition Monster Manual alphabetically, and we are on to letter L this week. There are a couple of big names in this chapter. We are going to hit up one of them, but we're not going to be doing too much into it. There are a couple monsters in here that I think are really fun that I honestly had not heard of one of them until I looked through the book, so I'm really looking forward to finding a way to include it into a future game because it's a very fascinating creature. So with that said, let's go and jump into the first one. We have the Lamia. If you remember the episode IJ, because I combined those letters because we had one entry under the letter J in the Monster Manual, that is the Jackalwares. The Jackalwares are the servants of the Lamias, so we've already mentioned them a little bit. Lamias are a large human-slash-lion hybrid. They are kind of like a sphinx, but a bit more of a centaur form. They are the head and torso of a person with the body of a lion, a male or female, and they are described as a large monstrosity. They are typically made by Grast, the Demon Lord, who we have mentioned many times. He's very popular in Monster Manual. He turns his mortal servants into a Lamia, granting them immortality and great power in exchange for loyalty. Sometimes he will task the now Lamia with guarding a location value to him, but normally they are just free to spread evil as they see fit. And oh boy, they are not pleasant. They love finding old ruins, ancient temples, places that are abandoned, and turning it into something beautiful that they control. They are obsessed first and foremost with beauty and appearance. So their domain may be this, you know, abandoned temple with jungles running around on the outside, and inside is a beautiful garden. You know, this complete juxtaposition of what it should be versus what you get. They will use a pool or mirror to scry to view their domain. They have a lot of magic potential. And that is also how they watch trade routes in nearby towns for things that catch their eye. Which, if they see something, they then send their Jackalwares to go retrieve it for them. They also really enjoy twisting people. In the Monster Manual, it says one of their favorite things is to take a pure-hearted adventurer and corrupt them. And using trickery and deceit and illusions in order to enthrall this person and turn them evil. And anyone that really doesn't live up to their standards, or if they just get bored of them or too old, whatever, they will either release them to die in the wilderness around them, because again, Lamias live in ruins, or they will eat them because they're evil. Lamias are not going to be in a straight-up fight, though. They tend to stay at the fringes and let their servants attack for them. They do have a lot of magic they can use to help out. If you do get them in a direct fight, they're going to slash you a couple times with claws and then run away. So they're not inherently cowards, but they're much more interested in control than in winning a fight. In 3.5, they are described as a medium creature. The 3.5 Monster Manual has pretty much the same description of them, just medium-sized. So I think it would be really easy if you needed to scale down the fight because they are a pretty high challenge rating of a 4. Not obnoxiously high, but you're not going to have first level party fighting these. But if you wanted to scale it down, you could drop their size rating and then drop the hit points to account for that, and you could adjust it a little bit. Fun fact, the 4th edition describes Lamias as a completely different creature, as a swarm of black scarabs disguising itself as humans. Entirely different monster on its own. So if you want to go mummy route, look at the 4th edition version. But 3.5 and 5th edition are pretty much in sync with it's a human-lion hybrid that is evil. So a couple of scenario ideas for them. The first is your party will be told of a recent wave of thefts that seem to have no roots in the black market, so automatically go ahead and wipe that off the board for them to investigate. Unless you really want to dig into that, I'd recommend just saying, we've already checked, there's nothing there, and just let your party go the other direction. But what needs to make these thefts interesting is they don't really seem consistent. They're not taking just gold. They're taking an old tapestry. They're taking exotic plants. They're taking, you know, someone's silk sheets. Like, it's things that wouldn't normally be stolen for value. And that is going to be what leads you to the Lamia, who's settling into a new layer. So these jackalwares are coming in, finding things they believe to be pretty, so to speak, and then bring it to Lamia for a review. So this is going to be a new layer that you're dealing with, so it's not an established position yet. So if your party wants to try to root out the Lamia, they can to protect the town, because eventually people will start getting taken. So this is basically a question of, does your party want to investigate and stop this in its tracks, or are they going to walk away and let this happen? The second option is a good deity is sending your party to remove a Lamia from a site of power that Grast has set it up in. So if you have a cleric or paladin in your party, very easy to say, hey, Divine Quest, go do this thing. If you don't, you can give them vision, or they can meet up with someone they know, either way. But they are going specifically to get rid of this Lamia. This will be better for a high-level quest, because the Lamia is going to be very tricky, and you're going to have jackalwares you want to make sure throw into it as well. So the fight itself is going to be a bit tough. So definitely a high-level party, which also justifies the reason why they're sending a random group of adventurers to fight this thing. But this is basically getting rid of a creature that's kind of settled into a site that is renowned for evil and protecting the area around it in doing so. The last option is a little bit kind of more subtle. So the Lamia may not even come into play into this one, but the party can either be from or be visiting a village where the local leader recently-ish has gone missing. So probably in the past few weeks, I would say. He wandered off, went missing, no one could find him. He has come back. However, he is different. Before this, he was very generous, very social. He was a great leader. He's beloved by everyone. Now he seems evil, you know, as best definitions you can get. And your party can discover, if they investigate, that he's been corrupted by the Lamia. Now, the Lamia doesn't use direct magic to corrupt people. It uses magic to influence people with illusions, but its goal is literally to corrupt them. So you could make it to where they could undo the damage if you wanted to, if it's brainwashing or something like that. But honestly, I think I'd make it more the issue of there's something in the area that is literally causing people to be changed. And that's a threat to this town, because anyone who is good is now at risk. So rather than the Lamia taking people because it needs slaves, it's doing it out of a pure game, which is going to be a little bit different of a reason, and your party may or may not even want to deal with it. It may decide where to move the town. So that is three options for the Lamia. Moving on to our next monster, we are going into the humanoid options with the lizard folk. Lizard folk is one that I actually don't really hear much about, interestingly, in D&D. I'm pretty sure in the Bolo's Guide to Monster, it is listed as a playable race now. And of course, it'd be super easy to adjust to a playable race. But it's not one you really hear a whole bunch about. Lizard folk are basically just humanoid-sized lizard people. Average size there. They have a tail. Look like lizards. Pretty self-explanatory by the name. They typically are found in swamps and jungles, living in small tribes. And they do whatever it takes to survive, with no concept of traditional morality. Now, I say traditional morality in the sense of good and evil. Their main goal is to survive and propagate. That's their goal. Their deity, Simunya, hopefully I said that right, is the definition of a neutral deity. If you want a god that your party can follow that does not care about them, this is the one. Because this deity literally doesn't care unless the lizard folk are about to be wiped out completely. Otherwise, he ain't touching it. And because he doesn't care about anything, none of the other gods have anything to do with him, because they just don't care. It's literally a definition of true neutral. No care either way, just survive. So because of this, there is no right and wrong. It's, does this allow me to survive? Then do it. They are very territorial. They're hunting grounds for this reason. So anything that walks into their turf is now prey. And they understand the opposites in reverse. They will form alliances, though. Again, whatever it takes to survive. And if they do form alliances with neighbors that are other races, humans, elves, dwarfs, whatever, they are very strong allies and very steadfast allies. They understand allegiance. They are not especially skilled craftsmen, so I hate to say they're very tribal in nature because I know how that sounds, but this kind of description they get, it's a very simple life for them. Again, it's just survival. It's not advancement. It's not growth. It's just survival. So their tools and ornaments are made of the bones of their kills. They use hides or shells from their victims and food to create shields. It's not elaborate, but it is well made. They are omnivores, but they do eat humanoid flesh, obviously. So traveling through their land is very dangerous. Their societal structure, again, they live in varying tribes, and they fear and respect magic with a religious awe. So they are typically led by shaman, who is leading them under the rule or the name of Samunya. However, occasionally, a lizardfolk is born who's touched by Sezenik. There's an apostrophe there. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. But Sezenik is a demon lord seeking to corrupt the lizardfolk for their own demise. No reason given why. I even Googled it. And in D&D lore, there's no reason why he hates Samunya. He just does. So as much as Samunya is true neutral and no one knows why, Sezenik just hates him for no reason. So he will corrupt a lizard folk. That lizard folk will be bigger and more cunning and will basically usurp the shaman's control. And oftentimes will declare themselves king or queen and start spreading aggression and taking over other tribes. So if you need an uprising among lizard folk, this is where you're going to find it. The lizard folk will also serve dragons if they're in the area. They're not as sycophantic as kobolds are. But lizard folk do know Draconic, and they believe it's because they were taught by a dragon. So they will bring tribute and offer service to dragon to win its favor. And if the dragon is evil, it'll definitely use them for its own gain. In past editions, lizard folk have been pretty much the same. They're a bit more aggressive in 3.5 and 4th edition, as far as lore goes. They're also patriarchal in those editions with a shaman advisor instead of a shaman leader. So if you wanted to kind of lean more into the king and queen side of a single lizard folk leading, that's going to be more the lore you might want to look at. There is something in 4th edition I really like, though. There is a variant to lizard folk. You have a green lizard folk and a black lizard folk. The green is going to be your standard one that everyone thinks of. The black-scaled lizard folk are actually going to be bigger, tougher, more brutish. They can live separately, but oftentimes they're intermingled and they kind of just are, you know, almost kind of like the draconic bloodlines for Dragonborn. Because of that, I think it'd be really fun if you wanted to play around with lizard folk in your world in general, just to have different colors and have slightly different attributes for those colors, especially with a slight connection in dragons. You could play with the chromatic colors a little bit. So maybe you have a white lizard folk that is your lizard king, because he's been touched by the demon lord, so he's a white scaled instead. You know, a lot of room to play around with. It's not necessarily story related, I realize, but I think it's a really fun variant to throw into it to make it a bit more diverse as to what you're dealing with and how to approach it. Because if you have a very brutish lizard folk by nature versus a very kind of sly and deceptive one, you're going to change your approach a little bit. And it allows more flavors for NPCs. For class suggestions, and if you do need a specific NPC, the 3.5 edition recommends Druid or Cleric, obvious reasons. I think those both work really well. So for options on these, for lizard folk, the first scenario involves a local town that is being threatened with invasion. Pick whatever group in your world that really your party would not want to side with, preferably. And they are going to be invading this town. And the town is next to a lizard folk tribe. So they can go and they're going to seek an alliance. So your party is sent to basically be the negotiations. So you're trying to form an alliance to help out because the invading force is also going to threaten the lizard folk. So that is more the political play of trying to get in and get a audience with the shaman of the tribe. The second scenario option is an area that has had peace with lizard folk tribes is now being attacked. This is because there is a king that has been, so to speak, put in place and is pushing tribe to extend the borders. Now, with this being said, lizard folk are not inherently loyal to a cause. They're loyal to survival. And I think you could very easily have a split tribe with this. You'd have people in tribe who are wanting to follow the new king because they believe that's the best option for survival. And you'd have people in tribe who believe, no, we shouldn't, because we're putting ourselves out there unnecessarily. So you could have a tribe that's being split by this, and your party is going to have to figure out how to interact with that. Not only do you have to, well, kill on sight, but you might actually be killing potential allies. So while it seems fairly straightforward of we need to make sure we are not having any issues with these guys by killing them, the ones you're killing off could be willing to help you later on. You know, tribes inherently have conflict, so there's no reason they wouldn't fight each other. The third option is that this lizard folk tribe is actually dying off. You can make it a regional effect, environmental effect that's happening. Could be encroachment on land. It could just be that the tribe is too big, whatever you want to make it. And the tribe is now going to move to a new area. Again, survival. If you can't survive here, we're going to leave. The party could be helping or they could be trying to stop this, either way. And depending upon the level of your party, you could also make it where they're encountering a scouting group rather than the whole tribe. Or the whole tribe could be coming through your area and you got to figure out how to navigate that. Because, again, lizard folk don't stray outside their territory because they know they could easily be hunted. So I think they would be on guard and they would be very cautious in what they do, but they are going to fight back. So you have to be careful in how you as a player want to deal with them, which means combat will be a thing, but there's a lot of good social option there. So that is going to be it for lizard folk. A very fun one, and honestly, I'd love to play as a lizard folk at some point. I think just be a fun character to be. The last creature we're going to be looking at today is the lycanthropes. Now, lycanthropes covers a lot more than just werewolves. A lycanthrope is any human or creature that is cursed after being wounded, usually by a bite, from a lycanthrope or has a parent with the curse. In 5th edition, lycanthropy is specifically a curse. If someone is bit, they can use the remove curse spell to remove the infliction. If they don't make the saving throw against it, but if you are a natural-born lycanthrope, you have to have a wish spell to remove this. Obviously, there have been a ton of homebrew rules on this, so you could leave that as it is, make your own, but that's the lore specific. Once you become a lycanthrope, you can either give in to your nature or fight against it. If you fight against the nature, then you're not going to remember things. You can keep your personality, but you may end up, you know, having blackout moments, having no control over the animal within you. If you give in to it, you do get some control. You get the shape-shifting ability. But it can influence your personality, and you can kind of shift your lifestyle a bit. Lycanthropes are kind of classic. Everyone kind of knows them. Whatever lore you've seen in movies of you get become a werewolf, that's pretty much what you're working with. In 3.5, there's actually a template specific to lycanthropes. So rather than here's a werewolf stat, here's a were-bear stat, and here's all the other ones, it's here's a were-creature stat block. You can apply this to anything you want. The fun thing is, in 4th edition, it's not a curse. It's a lineage. It is basically an entire race of beings. And they have a humanoid form, a mixed form, and an animal form. The monster manual I have for 4th edition only has were-rat and werewolf in it. But it does have some interesting options for kind of playing with them and what they can do. So if you wanted to make it a lineage specific, that is always an option. We do have 5 different types of were creatures within 5th edition. We have the werebore, which is a neutral evil. The were-rat, which is lawful evil. The werebear, which is neutral good. Were-tiger, which is a neutral. And werewolf, which is chaotic evil. So you have the whole gamut with these. And because of that, I'm actually not going to touch werewolf because I think we've done that quite a bit. But the other ones allow so much flexibility in game. Because yes, you turn out a full moon. But you also get all of these personality quirks and abilities the rest of your life. So we're going to dig into 3 options for some of these. I didn't do werebore because I'm not a huge fan of it personally. I think it's too close to werewolf as far as it's just pure destruction and carnage. There's obviously a good story option there, but I just don't personally find as much interest in it. So first off, we're going to make a snare for the werebear. Now, I love the werebear because it's basically what if Smokey the Bear was a person? And I actually had a werebear in my game, and that's what this first snare revolves around. So Beric, the werebear, needs your party's help to find an ancient talisman that will help him to control his transformations. He is a natural-born lycanthrope. It is a curse passed down in his family. He just happened to get it. And as the werebear, he is tasked with guarding his ancient family lands. Problem is, when you transform, you don't have as much control. Werebears are not as violent. They will specifically not use a bite attack because they don't want to pass on their curse unless it's to someone that they know is going to help them. And they tend to be loners for that reason. So having a werebear that's kind of out guarding land somewhere fits really well with that. But again, you don't have as much control. So finding something that can help you control that would be good. The second scenario is going to be for the were-tiger. Now, the image of the were-tiger immediately makes me think of the greatest game, the idea of the hunter hunting humans. So your party will get to town at the edge of a jungle. That's where were-tigers typically end up. And it's just a fun environment to play around with. And your party is warned to stay in time, to stay indoors because of the full moon. Most likely they're not going to listen, have some really good reason why they probably shouldn't. And while they're out, they are being hunted by a pair of were-tigers for sport. Again, were-tigers are neutral. It's a full moon. And were-tigers also typically don't like to fight in their were-form. So transforming, to me, for them, means they're going to really lean into that big cat side, which means playing with your food. And I made it a pair because this would be the game aspect of it. Were-tigers typically live solo or with family because they don't like competition. So if you have, say, a husband, wife, or a pair of brothers who are competing with each other, see who can get the most kills or have the most ingenious hunt, that's going to be an interesting one because your party has basically fallen into the were-tiger's game by accident. And the last scenario is for the were-rat. One of the podcasts I've listened to actually did have the were-rat in a city feature. They're very much like a small gang kind of setup because they don't bite people to turn them into were-rats unless they're initiating them into the group. And if you leave the group, you are killed. So your party is going to be investigating this new gang that's popped up that has been causing problems. And this is going to be a gang of were-rats. Party won't know at the time, but as they investigate and follow them to the sewers, they will discover that the core members and the leader are were-rats, and they need to find out who the leader is and where the hideout is to let the authorities know. They're not necessarily going to have to go into a fight. This is more of a subterfuge and stealth quest, but they're going to be going up against a were-rat, which is going to be tricky because as soon as you add on any were element to a person, they get a lot better sense of smell, and it's a lot harder to hide from them. And your party is not going to know that, and it's going to be very funny to see. So that is going to be it for the lycanthropes. Again, there's a lot with the werewolf that has been done. I didn't even bother with them for that reason. And there's a lot more with these three you could do. That is going to be it for this episode. So we have the Lamias, the lizard folk, and a couple of lycanthrope characters, specifically the werebear, were-tiger, and were-rats. Let me know what you would do with these three. Well, yes, five creatures, technically. It's a lot more monsters than I realized. But let me know what you do with them, if you do anything different, or how it goes if your party decides to go face-to-face with Lamia, either medium or large size. If you have any monsters you want me to cover in the next letters coming up, let me know, and I'll dig into those. Otherwise, I will see you next time.
Hello, Bob Spuds here on the scene once again, reporting for Potato Candy Network. Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. If you have a scenario prompt you want us to use, send it to us on social networking with Instagram and Facebook at Potato Candy Network. And if you really liked us, consider supporting us on Patreon for bonus content monthly, such as behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, inspirations, and future episode previews. Check out our brother show, Dreadful Tales, for some taut-tension-full, truly terrifying tales of terror. Got that on the first try, you know. And finally, please leave us a review, as it helps your recommendations and helps others find the hard work we do here at Potato Candy Network. Oh, and friendly reminder, if someone asks you if you're a god, don't think of marshmallows. Nobody likes that guy.